Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Today on the show, we have Emilian. Emilian's the co-founder and CEO of QuaiWave, and super excited actually to have him on the show today because he's got a wealth of experience in financial services, predominantly in sort of the payments area. But other than that, he's also sort of trailblazing the way for remote working. So even before the pandemic hit, you know, Emilian had set up his business to be remote. So we're going to get some insights into that today. Mate, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Let's kick off the show. What I like to do at the front end of the show is just give people a bit of insights into you and your entrepreneurial journey. So on that note, I mean, it would be good to maybe kick off with understanding how you have leveraged coaches or mentors as you started out in your business and also at maybe various stages as you've grown your business.
Yeah, I'm an engineer, so there was a lot of things that I had to learn pretty quickly when we started the company. And one of the things that I really had to use a mentor or a mentorship was sales, because it was something that is really not that typical for an engineer guy, and it's not that easy to comprehend. So this is definitely something that I have used a mentor for and think it was pretty successful. Another thing, I was getting some help in negotiations. So these are the two things that for me as an engineer were very important. Otherwise, nothing specific besides that. But of course, you talk to other co-founders, you talk to other people that run businesses, and this helps also a lot. So I think the best advices that I get are actually from people that also run their businesses and they have quite an experience. So yeah.
And tell me more about just on the mentorship and the coaching side. Maybe you can give us an example of, you know, the sales advice or the negotiating skills that you developed over time working hand in glove with a mentor or a coach.
Sure. I mean, it's a B2B business, right? So
yeah.
Businesses are offline, sales are done offline. So people can tell you can do a lot of digital marketing and stuff, but at the end, it's the offline and the connection to real people that give you the sales. You have to grow your network, and this happens in events, right? So this is the best thing that you can do. I mean, besides working with your clients and stuff, There are a lot of practical things that you can learn from a mentor about how to behave around these people. And especially for me, in the financial services, I mean, I'm coming in as an engineer running a small company. I want to obviously to sell, right? I mean, you're there to sell, but you get to somehow get into conversations with the people. And it turns out that people are also very shy. And this advice is, you know, where to stand, at which point to approach people. This has been quite helpful to me. You know, it's something like when people eat, they can have a chat, but don't bomb them with questions or something because they want to have a pause, you know, and have a snack, you know. So stuff like this, you know, very, very concrete stuff that we have been working. Of course, this is more anecdotal on the offline side, but of course, a lot of how to build processes around these things, because it's easy to say I'm a good salesman, but at the end, you don't need a salesperson, you need a sales machine, you know, so something that works. And there have been great advices in this area.
And you mentioned sales machine. I was wondering, can you help me understand it and pack that a bit for our listeners?
Sure. I mean, as I said, I'm an engineer, but
yeah.
being mentored,
yeah. Yeah,
over the years, and I needed to learn some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So at the end, being an engineer, I see everything as a machine, you know. So we have our software delivery machine and our sales machine and our HR machine, you know. So it needs to run like a machine. So processes, okay, you have to maintain it, but still this needs to run like this. And the sales machine is just a set of processes that guide you to the process of actually acquiring customers, you know, and there is a sales funnel that everyone knows, but how you actually deal with that. So I don't have it at the moment. You can, this is a huge board where there is like this tree of decisions and how these things go, how they are labeled, what to do, how things go into Salesforce. So this is what I picture as a sales machine, you know. So really well-oiled processes where people, for me, it's very important. It doesn't depend on one person or one skilled personnel, but it depends just on a well-oiled machine. And you can basically replace anyone. So.
And within that machine, obviously, there's people that are helping you at different parts of the process, right?
Of course, of course. At the moment, in the sales department, there are three people that are working for us. And yeah, it's for us has been great achievement to do that because, and for me personally, as an engineer, it was a great achievement to have something like this working because we can always make the software part work. So this is what I went to university for, but this part was quite tricky. And in general, I think sales in B2B sales is quite tricky. So we're quite happy to have achieved that. And the people we're working on are really great. And they have this great soft skills that you need as a salesperson, but they also understand the business very well, both financial and technology. And this is really important, I think, for people out there to have to have such personnel on board.
Yeah, and you mentioned soft skills because it's in any type of business, whether it's or any type of function within a business, it's important to have those skills because they help you. It must be more so in sales. They help you build relationships, right?
Sure, of course. I mean, I'm not the guy that understands everything, and sometimes I'm looking at these guys and saying, "Oh, they're so much better than I am," right? In these things. So, but this is actually one of the good things when you are a founder. After a few years, you can actually afford to have people on board that are smarter, better than you in some things. So that's quite exciting, to be honest.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it allows you, I guess, also to make certain that your work-life balance as a founder, as you're scaling up, is also part and parcel of the journey. And how have you approached that side of the coin for yourself and also as a business owner thinking about the team that you have?
Well, if someone tells you... No, because this work-life balance, it's my opinion. In the first years, you have to catch up on so many things.
Yeah,
I think it's an illusion to think that you can have a good work-life balance. So I think even if you have the greatest idea in the world, you have to do so. You have to learn so many things so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's just impossible to have a good balance. So I think the balance goes to the work, to the work part. But what you can do is just make sure that the people around you understand what you're going through and are actually supportive, and you know that there is an end to this. So it's not going to be always like this. But for me, it's really not possible to have at the beginning a good work-life balance because you simply need to do so much things. But at one point, you start, exactly this is the point where you can afford to hire smart people that do an excellent job. And then you can actually move away from your involvement to actually delegating a lot of the stuff that you do to other people. And in this case, that works.
Yeah. And you mentioned delegation and scaling up and building that team. What point did that transpire for you in your growth journey?
I just wanted to quickly, I'll answer that right now, but I just wanted to add because you asked how we deal with the work-life balance.
Oh, yeah, for yourself. Exactly.
And I see that people have this, how should I put it? When people are excited, they do stuff like, okay, I'm on vacation, but I still take calls, or I still do this and that, or during my vacation, I will accomplish this, or I'll have some time to think, so I'll be able to accomplish this. I think I'm always saying this is a very, very bad idea. Mm. So for me, for years, it was not possible to, for example, to take a nice vacation where I can really completely switch off. Mm. You know, I have had calls in the middle of on the safari, you know, in the middle of savannah. I had calls because something was going terribly wrong. But this was a long time ago, and now I'm telling everyone, look, guys, in order to really be good in your job, you also have to be good in relaxing. And this means taking vacation and not thinking about work. This means taking vacation for a longer period of time than a week, for example. So because a week is really the absolute minimum that that you can take, but you should more. And this is the stuff that we talk about, and we actually look HR-wise, we actually look how people are dealing with vacation and stuff, and trying to force them to do the right thing in this regard.
That's good. I mean, and how does that play out from an employee retention perspective? I mean, I guess you get lots of engagement, lots of willingness to sort of stay on the journey.
Sure. We have been quite happy with retention, and this is, I think there is no single reason for this. I think there are a lot of reasons for this. And the remote work for years was, in my opinion, the most important part, because we were actually allowing people to live their lives whatever they want. And this was really something that, before Corona, I think for a lot of people was not possible, and a lot of people were not thinking about this. But I think, in general, it helps to have, let's say, relaxed people to have the good engagement. So let's say it like this. So you want to make people happy, and there are a lot of things HR-wise that you need to do. It's not a simple thing.
I hear you. And so, interesting. I mean, you've obviously been on an interesting journey. And how has your role as sort of co-founder and CEO changed from sort of 10 years ago to today?
Well, of course, it changed a lot. And I think at the beginning, it's just a chaos, right? So everything is doing everything, and you have to take every role. And it's actually important to take every role just to understand how it works on this position. But over time, of course, you try to structure your company. And being an engineer, it has been both a blessing and sometimes maybe a little bit too much, in terms of, we have been structuring everything, but sometimes maybe overthinking stuff. In general, I think a lot of the journey has been to learn to delegate, to enable other people to take decisions, to take responsibility. And just looking forward, identifying the what is missing, and approaching it, solving it, and moving on. So,
and obviously, I mean, obviously, a big part of what you did during those formative years was make a decision. You mentioned it earlier, make a decision how you set your company up, and you decided to go along the remote working route. So you wouldn't have an office. You'd have people that are scattered around Europe and around the globe helping you out. And can you walk us through why you decided that a number of years ago? What was the thinking process that you went through in order to get to that outcome and that decision?
Well, honestly, it was an easy decision to make. I mean, I can tell you that we did a lot of analysis and were thinking a lot about this. But actually, the reason for this was very practical. I mean, me and my co-founders, we used to live in Berlin, in Hamburg, in Wien, quite large cities. And we were always discussing, man, I hate needing to travel every day for 1.5 or 2 hours to work and back. Why can't I just work from home? And it was just, for us, it was natural. That's actually maybe one of the reasons why we started the company at all, just to make this way of working possible for us. Maybe also for other people, but on first stage for us and ourselves. And because really, it's nice to work side by side with colleagues. That's nice. And we also have offices, so it's not like remote only. So if people like, and if they can or need to go there, for example, small child at home, too much noise, whatever, they can go to the office, but it's not mandatory. So they can decide when, how. And I think, and we also do a lot of team buildings, you know, so where we say, okay, guys, we haven't seen each other for a while now, so we need to everybody come together, and we go someplace nice for the weekend, going skiing or going to the seaside or whatever, you know. So a lot of this coffee machine talk happens just on these team buildings, you know, so you don't get out on this. But the decision was very practical. So we knew that there are a lot of people out there that will enjoy this way of work, and they will enjoy the fact that they don't have to lose like hours and hours in commuting every day. So
and
it's actually pretty obvious decision for us. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's folk out there that are going, okay, that's 10 years ago, maybe ahead of the time in a way. What are the three steps that you would recommend people to take if they wanted to set up a successful remote part of their business? What are the three things you think are key?
I can try.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, we have started this way. So we haven't made a transition, and making a transition is obviously a bigger task than this. But I think it's really important to have rules, you know, to have processes that are in place. People are always saying, when you're in one office, you don't need that many rules. I disagree completely, you know. So it's also about scaling. I cannot imagine like 100 people sitting in one room and everyone screaming, hey, I'm done with this task, you take over or whatever. Mm. This would never work, right?
Yeah.
So at the end, you have to have processes, and it's really important to not overdo this, because you don't want to turn your business into a bureaucracy. And it's really not needed, you know. So people think, when I think a lot of managers, when they think about the remote work, they feel they cannot see how people are working, they cannot control the process. And actually, if you have a good process, controls itself, right? So you don't have to have a big oversight on this. And having just a little bit of data, you can see what's happening, can control it. I personally think even better than if people are on site, right? Because for me, I can look at data, you know. Even I can look at each project and see what's happening right now. And this is something where if you're working only offline, you practically don't get, you know. So the first thing is really having processes. Second thing, I think, not overdoing this. And the third thing is really give the people the possibility to meet themselves, right? So to meet with each other, you know. So whether it's a team building, whether it's an office event or whatever, because, you know, we have been quite blessed. And I think with the whole corona, you can say that things are running, when you compare to everything that has happened, we're really blessed. But at the end, we have also small problems. And one of those is people not meeting each other, you know, like the kids who cannot meet at school. And this is true for colleagues also. So if you want to go remote and hopefully soon there is no corona, meet, go have things, and replace this coffee maker talks with some other way.
So that's interesting. So the interaction with the team isn't lost when you go remote. Actually, it's just replaced by another mechanism where you can, I don't know, you mentioned it earlier, meet up for team building events, or meet up for or dinner, or meet up for a workshop. Is that what you were referring to?
Yeah, definitely. So you need to be remote. Doesn't mean that people are working like robots just behind a screen and you don't interact with your colleagues. It just means that it gives you the possibility to be much more flexible, which is good for so many people, especially young people. So our company, I think the average age is below 30 years old. So these are young people. They like to go in the mountains. They like to go traveling. And for them, just being that flexible, it's a huge bonus, you know. And I think other companies can also leverage this and offer this to their employees. But the connection stays, you know. You still need to be... these are still persons, and they talk to each other. They interact in a similar way. And if I know that the person plays tennis and I move to another city and say, oh, can you recommend me a coach or whatever, you know, or where I go or where is good to go, they will tell me. So I know these people. They are my colleagues. It's not different.
And you also mentioned that you need to have processes, but the processes shouldn't be rigid. They need to be, I guess, in a way, there to help the teams collaborate. I mean, could you give us an example of some processes that you've put in that allow this collaboration to take place online?
Well, keep in mind, we're doing software, so it's quite natural to for everything to happen online, right? So even the code and the code transfers over internet either way, right? So you do the deployments over internet either way. But I don't know, these typical things that you have like Scrum and Kanban, or I know I've been to a lot of offices where they have their, you know, their boards with their tasks on the wall or whatever. I cannot get data from this, you know, I cannot analyze it in a way, you know, and if I move it left or right, or I move it in gyro left or right, it's the same. So at the end, it's just small digitalization of the normal processes that you do either way. You just you just need to write some documentation or maybe record Zoom call, you know. So this is also something that you do, right? So we have also experimented in, there is where you can get some transcription from calls and stuff. No, this is the stuff that you can do. It's not big science. It's not something, there is nothing crazy that we do. It's just following, just using simple tools that you would probably use also in an office.
And I like what you mentioned earlier on, actually also mentioned it a second ago around data. Because all this information that you're gathering, like gone are the days where you have to have a whiteboard and scribble on a whiteboard, because ultimately you can rub things off a whiteboard and it goes into the ether. Right now you insert it into the machine, to use your terminology, and out comes data, which allows you as a CEO to really understand what's going on at different parts of the business, right?
Yeah, from these kind of people that like to base my decisions when it's possible on data. So definitely collecting data over all processes is really important, whether it's sales, whether it's the actual software development. That's the best way. And if you get this more or less for free or with minimum effort, I said before, not overdo it, don't turn this into a bureaucracy, but still, when you, with little effort, you can get the data, and people are doing this either way, then you should definitely try to collect it and analyze it. A lot of this is also not just data that you use for decision making, but it's just simply documentation. So I found out in my experience before Kyware that there are these knowledge silos in big companies. You know, there are people that hold the knowledge. So you have to push the people to document this knowledge in a certain way. So you have something that is tangible in your head. So I'm talking Confluence, you know. So you need to have all this knowledge, whether it's a product knowledge, whether it's a software development knowledge, whether it's sales knowledge. There, it needs to be documented. Otherwise, people become irreplaceable, you know. And this is not sustainable at the end.
It's interesting you mentioned that. And as you go through this remote working or units, right? You're working it every day. How do you motivate your team on a day in, day out basis, week in, week out, month in, month out? How does that communication between sort of you and the team work?
Well, I think the motivation is, it's a cliche, but it's a leadership thing, you know? So you always lead by example. And I think this is what motivates people a lot. And it has been also with the remote work, right? Because we started this and we have shown that it works. We ourselves as co-founders have shown, okay, remote works this way. So in these remote processes, in this way of work, and also in, again, in the normal work processes, you do the example and say, okay, I'm doing this stuff. You need to be, in my opinion, the guy that comes first online. In this case, in the remote case, it's not coming first in the office, but it's you need to be the first one that comes online and the last one to go offline, right? So it's I know it's cliche, but I think this is the best way to motivate people, and it has been for us.
So leading by example, right?
Definitely.
And you also touched on rules of engagement, and I'd like to sort of dive into that. I mean, because we talk about processes, we talk about data, bureaucracy, or the hierarchy of a business, but there are, at some point in time, there are things that we all need to do in order to produce a product for our departments or produce a product for our clients. And outside of the key parts to scaling that, or to setting up a remote working team, what do you think are the rules of engagement when you as founders, and also, you know, when you're scaling up a remote team, what are the basic rules of thumb to consider?
Well, you mean with scaling, right?
No, well, you know, you got your remote team. You have your remote team there, and you want them all to obviously be, you want your team to be producing stuff. So some people call it values. In this instance, we're just saying rules. What are your rules of engagement in that sort of remote world to make certain that, you know, every day there's a step towards your mission?
Well, to be honest, I don't know. I mean, there are no rules. There is like showing up at work. This means going online at certain points during the day. There is really, besides, you know, some compliance things that you need to do from security point of view. I cannot think of anything that's special somehow, you know. It's, maybe it's just for us, it's quite natural to do things a certain way. And I have not analyzed this enough. I don't know. But to be honest, I think we were doing the same things that every other company is doing. We're just, when you're used to go to someone's room, you just text them on Slack, you know?
Yeah.
And I can remember a long time ago, I used to work for a company and it was offline, you know, and I can remember the software developers really hated that people were just walking into their office, and they were always asking me, please write me an email, text me, don't just come by because you're interrupting my thought process. I'm just trying to solve something. So just this, for example, I think is a very good thing that you can control when people actually arrive at your door, right? So you can say, okay, you have your Slack and people are texting you. It may be blinking, but you have something important right now and you're thinking about the problem that you need to solve. You can delay this, right? And if urgent, people will call you, obviously. But this is something that I think a lot of people realize, that having this kind of chat instead of this big conference calls with 200 people, it's quite a time saver, right? So it's like one question and there are 10 people that can answer it. A lot of the times when I'm looking at the chat and I know the answer is something, but I don't have time to answer it now, I come back to this half an hour later, someone else answered it already, you know. So
yeah, I hear what you're saying. And it's interesting you mentioned offline and online. And for remote working to actually work, you have to be online. What are the key sort of tech tools that you guys use? I mean, you mentioned Jira, you mentioned Slack, you mentioned Confluence. What else is in your toolbox that you think is useful for others to look at as they potentially go to a remote world?
Sure. Well, to be honest, there is, again, nothing that special. And I think every company provides this thing. So one thing maybe a little bit special is the mobile internet that we provide for every employee. This we just decided to do, right? So it's something that we give everyone, the small router. Otherwise, a nice laptop. And I think this is it. I mean, you don't need from two sets. We use Slack, obviously.
Yeah.
We use Jira and Confluence. And everything else is quite techy, and it's connected with the fact that we actually do software development.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, you can see the power of those tools, for example, Confluence and Google Docs, in collaborating, really, because, again, it's you can write commands, you can come back to things, you can put tasks into it. It's really quite different that when I compare it, for example, in my communication with my with our legal team, right, which is an external company. With them, I have to exchange emails. I have to have Word. We track changes, you know. When I do this internally, we just leave comments. Everything is much, much quicker, right? So it's incomparable.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And listen, I mean, it would be interesting to know as you've moved through the process, how have you guys as a remote team, as a team that is obviously taking on, you know, some great projects and some great clients, how have you been able to establish yourself in the market as leaders and the go-to experts in your space?
Well, it's both something, it's actually by coincidence, to be honest, because as we started the company, we had a specialization that had nothing to do with fintech. It was mobile, you know, so building mobile applications. And we came into payments by accident. And thanks also to my sales mentor and to our instinct, we decided to focused on one thing, you know, and become very good. And actually, I think it's one simple word would be just specialization, you know. If you're a specialist, if you're the go-to expert in something, you become a go-to expert when you do one thing very good. If you have a very broad product or a service that tries to cover everything, you will not be solving these problems very good. And by focusing on small things, but doing them very well, I think this is how you become the go-to expert in an area.
I think you hit the nail on the head at the end. Listeners, as you are growing and moving your business forward, what questions are you asking yourself? And also, what factors are you as a co-founder and CEO and also your senior team, what factors are you considering as you move forward?
Well, if we're talking in general, I would say that, you know, it's always a bet against the future, you know. So you always try to imagine how the future will look like and trying to find so the best way how the company is now and the world is now. You imagine how the future will be and what you need to do to reach a point where you want to be.
Yeah.
And of course, what a lot of people don't realize, and this is also something I think a lot of people make a mistake also personally not running a company, is you always bet on the future, you know. Even if you say nothing will change, this again is a bet. So you're always betting against the future. It's just simply that you may be more, let's say, less riskier if you think, okay, I'll just take a more defensive point. Yeah. So I think in general, this is what we consider and trying always to understand how things will look like. I can give you an example. Yeah. Before Corona, we were pretty sure that some kind of crisis is coming, right? And I think a lot of business leaders were aware of this because it's simply something that happens all the time. And there were signs that something like this is coming. If it wasn't Corona as a disease, then it would have been something, in financial or economic crisis, right? So it's something that just the world needs from time to time. And we were preparing for this, you know, and there are things that you can do, like stockpile some cash and stuff like this, you know, and not get risky in this moment where you actually see that something is in the air, you know.
Yeah.
So this is something that I think people should really try to imagine where the world would be in half a year or in 1 year.
Mm.
When we're talking about financial services and fintech, I think we're always looking at these big M&A activities, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think they changed the whole market a lot. And this is true for the US. This is also true for Europe, definitely, because you see a lot of M&A activity and large companies merging with other large companies, with again larger companies. So, and I think people need to be aware of this because this changes the market a lot. So these big companies, when they become bigger, obviously they become more powerful, but also slower, right?
Mm.
And this is both a threat, but also a big opportunity because this is the simple economic theory, right? If a company becomes very big, it becomes very slow. So then you have room for startups to just be quicker and solve problems quicker. And yeah, this is how the world works, right?
Yeah,
so this is what we're looking at all the time. So how these M&A activities are going. And also for me, the future of fintech is really when will this happen between the banks and the fintechs, you know, because a lot of times we say fintech, you know, but we didn't say we don't call radiology medtech, right? So if you invent a machine that helps in medicine, you don't just automatically say this is a new industry. And I think there was a big gap between the financial services were and are still very regulated. And this is why fintech came out. But at some point, it needs to merge back, you know, because the banks are moving in the direction. And I think at one point, we'll not be talking this is a fintech, it's just financial services normal, you know, which are digitalized.
Yeah. It makes complete sense what you're saying. And you're definitely looking to the future is a must for leaders, right? Especially now, there's a lot going on and a lot to consider. And as you look to the future, and as you are a leader that hopes to have a crystal ball, right? How do you self-educate? What books are you reading? What podcasts are you listening to? What YouTube channels are you following to keep up with the trend, and also maybe you think would be useful for our listeners to either read, listen, or watch?
Interesting question. Yeah, I read a lot stuff like, I don't know, Financial Times, Economist, just trying to get a big picture of the economic and political way the world is going. Otherwise, they're, for fintech, they're the usual suspects, and for payments, they're the usual suspect. I guess everyone knows them on the podcast. Yeah. Would know them, you know. So I don't need to say a lot. Actually, I learned is on events. I used to learn a lot on events. It's just amazing talking to people, and it's just uncomparable with reading a book about something. It's just having someone with experience explaining to you, or while having dinner or having some drinks after a conference. That's just amazing. Yeah, I'm a big fan of this, and there a lot of the time also on these events they're just really great presentations from people, so really lively and really good. So yeah, book wise I don't, to be honest, I stopped this a long time ago, and I'm more of a at the moment I read Shogun. So it's I try to do the work-life balance now, let's say.
There we go. That's the way we should be going, right? And listen, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, and I think everyone will really enjoy today's show. We've dived into an area that people have been discussing, and obviously people have been trying to figure out over the last little while. So your insights have been really, really helpful. But before we log off, how can the listeners get in touch with you and the guys at Quaywave?
Well, sure. Just drop me a note on LinkedIn.
Cool. Okay, that's the easiest way. Well, we'll leave your LinkedIn profile on the show notes. And again, awesome show today. A great diving into the details of what it takes to set up a remote team. And thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.